morning. This is the Lou Rockwell Show, and it's an honor to have as our guest today Dr. Ron Paul. Ron is, what do we say about him? I mean, he's, of course, a longtime congressman, a platform he used to vastly advance the liberty movement, also with his presidential campaigns, a man who is all over the world the leader of the freedom movement. We'll be talking a little bit about his trip to Brazil in a moment. He's president of the Institute for the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. He's involved in the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum. If you're homeschooling your children, that's the place to go. He's head of Voices of Liberty, Ron Paul's Voices of Liberty, and he's a board member of the Mises Institute and a long time, from the very beginning, distinguished counselor of the Institute. So, Ron, I thought we'd start off this morning by talking about, you know, the Islamic State and what's happening there, what seems to be, to me anyway, not only the evil but irrational policy of the U.S. What's happening?
Well, it looks like the old adage about us going about the world looking for monsters to destroy is pretty much true. It looks like we're still doing that. But the whole thing is, if they don't find any, our government seems to be able to create them. And so much of the problems that exist in the Middle East, I see as a consequence. Of course, people like to turn that around and say, you mean they're not guilty of anything? It's all our fault. Well, it's a combination of things. What our policies are doing is eliciting, you know, the violence in that region, which is smoldering anyway, because there's a constant civil war going on over in the Middle East, and especially, you know, amongst the Muslims and the radical Sunnis and the radical Shia. So we go over there and get in the middle of this, and everybody becomes hysterical over it and make so much more of it than if we'd have just followed the advice of those who worried about us going about the world and looking for monsters to destroy. If we'd have followed that, the advice that they gave us then was don't get involved in the entangling alliance. Make friends with those who want honest friendship and have commerce with them and seek peace. But we are so far removed from that. And the propagandists are so effective. This last year has been a bit discouraging because I thought we were making some headways on our position on non-intervention. But now the propagandists have been able to use some of the violence over there and some of the killing. And with the government and the media, they have been able to reverse a lot of that, that so many people, you know, are ready to go bomb. Of course, I don't think they want to go. These guys that want to do all the bombing, I always want to ask them, do you want to go over and drive one of those trucks and patrol that territory over there? Of course not. You know, they want your kids to do and somebody else's kids to do it, but they never want to. So I see it as an utter consequence and a tragedy of a foreign policy that's deeply flawed, and we're in the midst of a real struggle with presenting our case, where I believe the majority of Americans, when they have a real choice and know what we're talking about, I think they're overwhelmingly for us. Fortunately for us, though, is that in spite of the propaganda, I find that the young people are still with us because they're inheriting this mess, and they see it's a financial cost, but it's also a cost and a threat to our economy here at home.
You know, it's so funny. Of course, everybody's outraged at these beheadings, as they should be. I don't know entirely who's responsible for them, but they are outrageous acts. But nobody seems to care that Saudi Arabia beheads far more people than the Islamic State does, including for such crimes as witchcraft. I mean, they're beheading people for witchcraft. So that's, of course, entirely suppressed, but that's our great ally and a funder and the guy that George Bush kisses his hand and Obama bows down to him and so forth. So their beheading is perfectly okay.
Yeah, and I think there, during this period of time where the two or three had been beheaded, I think there might be, you know, 14 or 18 or in Saudi Arabia, and you're right, they don't put that on the news, because then we would have to question our alliance and our relationship with Saudi Arabia. But maybe if we ever get to see the final report of 9/11, maybe the American people's opinion would change. And I think that is something we have to continue to work on, because in spite of the handicap of government suppressing all this material, we have some people who are are considered conventional and not part of our group who are advocating release, like those who were on the commission. You know, those individuals say, there's no reason in the world why we can't find out about it. But most people suspect the information that is being kept from us actually deals with Saudi Arabia. And, of course, I blame Roosevelt for all of it. He made the commitment. Every president, every president since then has, you know, met that commitment, whatever you want. So that's the game they play.
I have a friend who was at a very, very high level investment meeting of CEOs and other important people in New York on 9/11. And they got up to announce what had happened. And they said everybody should stay. But the planes were ready to take the Saudi Arabians back to Saudi Arabia. And they left the meeting. This was a very, very top Wall Street meeting in New York City. So immediately they were being taken out and sent back to Saudi Arabia. When nobody else could take a flight. I remember you were trapped. Many other people were trapped. Americans couldn't take flights, but the Saudi princes were just wafted out immediately on a cloud and sent home.
Right. If my memory serves me right, I think it happened on a Tuesday, and by Friday I was still struggling to get out and heard about the Saudis getting out. And it wasn't just Saudis. It was a family with the last name of Bin Laden were leaving.
That's right.
Now,
that's right.
That's no proof of guilt. You know, we know that. But Saudi Arabia, where'd the hijackers come from? And all of a sudden they get to go out. And I think what the report is going to show is they were never quizzed, because that, you know, that kind of information does leak out when you're in Washington. I think most people knew that not only did they get to leave, but they were not even questioned by our FBI. So that's how efficient, you know, our security is. It provides a lot of security for our enemies.
Ron, you talked about the young people. You were recently a guest of the Mises Institute Brazil in Sao Paulo, and I know met with many, many students. And how do you feel about that trip? What about the kids you met there and the other people, of course?
Well, I didn't know what to expect. I knew that you had been down there and helped get the Mises Institute started down there, and they talked a lot about you. And, you know, the country's still a long way to, has a long way to go to become a libertarian country. So I wasn't, I thought maybe there'd be a few and there would be some enthusiasm, but it really, really, was exciting, because I talked to two groups. One, the hardcore Mises group, it was a little bit smaller, but they actually had to pay, you know, to come to this event. And I think there were several hundred, maybe 300-400, as I recall. And then there was another group, which was more like a chamber of commerce group, business group, but mostly young people. And there was a lot more. I can't remember, probably over 1,000. And so the reception was very good. I was also on one of these, the most popular talk show host at nighttime, sort of, you know, like we have here.
And like a Jay Leno show or something.
Yeah, sort of like the Jay Leno show. But to me, you know, I walked in and the audience was there. The faces just looked like I was in America, but I wasn't in America, and I really wasn't in Brazil, but I was among friends who were really involved in something philosophic, not nationalistic. So their reception, everything was very similar. And it is a little tedious listening, you know, to Portuguese in one ear and English in the other ear and keeping up with it. But it seemed to have worked pretty well. But the impression I had was, my goodness, this is just like the college campuses of in the United States. I thought, well, maybe there is some real progress. Of course, we've often talked about, you know, how this message is spreading, and it is international. You know, this past week I had two interesting invitations, and I found them fascinating. I don't think I'll be able to attend either one, but Marie Le Pen sent me a personal note to come and speak before her political party. You know, she had come to see me in Washington before I left, and she wanted to talk about the gold standard. And so, you know, there was a little bit of controversy there, but she was still very eager to talk to me, and she's reached out. And of course, I won't be able to do that. But the other one was an individual that actually came to see me in Lake Jackson and followed up with an invitation to go to Switzerland and visit over there and do some PR work for the referendum on gold. And I thought, well, why would they care about me? I'm not even in Congress. Why do they want me to come over there and talk about, you know, gold in the referendum? I may do more.
Yeah, well, you're Dr. Gold. That's why.
But, and it looks like I won't be able to do that. But it's one that was sort of very, very sympathetic to, you know, it'd be neat to say we participated in something very historic because, you know, if the Swiss turn this around and say they're voting to go in a different direction, you know, they were the last ones out of the gold standard. Maybe they're the first one to nudge us back in that direction. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
No, and I know that the Swiss, like the Germans, like people in many other countries, are outraged that a lot of their gold is being held either at the Fed or at the Bank of England. They'd like the gold back in their own country. And this, of course, considered an unbelievable outrage and makes you suspicious that maybe, even if the gold is there, maybe it's owned by somebody they're not telling us.
You know, the same thing occurred with Germany. You know, Germany asked for it. The idea was floating around for a year or two, and it became official, and the request came. And then we said, well, no, everything is okay, but we can't give you the gold right now. That is what the Fed says. But over the next 7 years, we might, you know, be able to do this. Now, we sort of can postulate what's going on here. But the whole thing is why didn't Merkel back away? And why did she, you know, she was with the people. It seems like politically it wasn't the best thing to do to not defend the German people's gold. And my guess is that she just ran into some resistance to explain to her, do you realize what this is going to do to world finances? You could crash the dollar. You could do this, and everybody's going to want it. This could be bigger chaos than we had in 2009 if this is out. So you can't do this right now. And but if they wanted, if they had the gold, they could have said, well, we better, you know, settle this and reassure everybody the gold is there and do it. But no, they don't, because it's probably locked up somewhere. Often thought that, you know, why does the Fed and our Treasury resist so strongly auditing the gold reserves here? If they have the gold and everything is above board, wouldn't it be to their advantage to just quiet us for speculating and say, hey, maybe they don't have the gold there. I wonder what's happening. No, they resist it tooth and nail, the same way, generally speaking, about auditing the Fed, you know, to know their paperwork. If they're not doing anything, you know, crooked, and they're not serving the interests of some powerful people, they would say, yes, come look at the books. But obviously, that's not going to happen.
Ron, thinking about the Fed, what's happening with them? I noticed audit the Fed, which is, of course, a good first step, recently passed the House again. What's your feeling about what crimes is the Fed committing at the moment, and what about the opposition to them?
Well, I think their crimes are usual, but I think we are in the midst of a historic change, because I don't believe the world has ever been involved in a total fiat currency for more than 40 years. They've had them here and there, and they come and go, and they're usually one country here or so. But since 1971, the world's been on total fiat money, the dollar standard, and I believe that what we're seeing when the next crisis comes, or the one that's sort of formulating right now, I think it's going to prove that central banks don't have any idea what they're doing. I think it's going to be great news, and they're going to be totally discredited, which I hope our foreign policy will be totally discredited. So we should look forward to these wonderful changes where the governments who orchestrate all the wars are discredited, and when the central banking, which we've lived with for so long, is a total failure. Because now how many years has it been since 08, six years? All they have done is pump, and they're not getting anywhere. So the biggest thing is to make sure that the blame falls on the shoulders of the central bank, in contrast to what happened in the 30s, because we who believed in markets and thought that gold was a better monetary standard than paper, they got the blame. The intellectuals in the universities were still, you know, they were shifting around, and they were saying, we don't need anymore. It's all the fault. it's all the fault of the gold standard and capitalism and freedom and the marketplace. But right now, we have a chance to say, you've had your chance. You've had it not only since the 30s, but especially since the 70s. And you've done everything in the world you said you wanted to do. You've had a free reign. And all we get is more debt and less economic growth and more poverty, a shrinking middle class. And I think the problems are going to get a lot worse.
Ron, speaking of who they are trying to blame, there was an interesting column in the Daily Telegraph in London by a guy called Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who's a huge Keynesian, just a mega Keynesian, and he's always calling on the European Central Bank and the Bank of England, for that matter, to pump, you know, put out more money, print more money. And he said that they've been hesitant, the ECB, the European Central Bank, has been hesitant to do it, in his view anyway, recently, and he said they're being constrained by the Austrian economists. They're listening to the Austrian economists, and this is a total disaster. So I thought, hey, well, I'm glad to hear it.
Let's just hope that they really can sort it out and know which group to blame. You know,
that's
if
right.
It comes down and say, see, we did take too much advice from the Austrian economists and then try to turn it around. But I don't think you're going to be able to do that, because I think central economic planning deserves to be we need to get rid of that, and especially the power of a secret central bank operating. There's nothing like this ever been in the history of the world, where so much malinvestment and distribution and bad information has existed, and they've gotten away with it for a long, long time. But it's a mess, and they're not going to give up their ways. They will pursue it until the market dictates that it makes no sense, and that's what is always happening when the market wants these corrections, whether it's the stock market, the bond market, or whatever, economic growth. That's the market saying what you're doing is wrong. So that's why the work of the Mises Institute is so important. Reach all those people and get the professors out there to change the minds and hearts of this younger generation, and that's where I think we're seeing some progress.
Ron, you've always been a champion of civil liberties and, of course, an opponent in the recent years of this horrendous NSA surveillance. I was glad to see that both Google and Apple are talking about encoding their new operating systems so that not only can't the NSA read it, Google and Apple can read it, people will have privacy. You've always pointed out that things are reversed in Washington. The government has privacy. The people have no privacy. Should be the people have privacy. The government has no privacy.
Yeah. I saw that, and I thought, this is great, because I'm always arguing that from my experience in Washington, I don't expect the politicians and the bureaucrats all of a sudden to change their ways. And the competition has to come, through technology that we can devise in the marketplace, where you just go around the government. But we're always going to be challenged. How heavy a hand will the government come down on Google if they devise something like this and say, hey, no, you're not allowed to have this privacy? But let's hope this is just the opening salvo, where privacy is not turned over to the government to protect, because they always abuse it, but it's turned over to technology and the technicians who know how to invent things to provide the privacy that everybody deserves.
I was astounded to see in Snowden's revelations. And of course, you've been a great champion of his freedom and not being jailed by the U.S. The U.S. turns over what's called raw data, that is everything with people's names, everything to be able to track people, know who their identities on everything NSA collects in America, which would include, of course, congressmen, Supreme Court justices, the president, you and me. I mean, everybody turns it all over to Israel. Now, how come this is not a controversy? That some foreign country gets information on every American's emails, phone calls, private conversations, and so forth, bank accounts, spending, everything.
You know, I think it was Bamford that wrote that fantastic article on that and exposed that. But his article didn't get very far. You know, you had to read it, on the internet someplace. But no, it doesn't get on the evening news or anything else. Well, I guess maybe there's special privileges granted to some countries as others. But, you know, but our government's in there for balance. You know, if they're given special privileges and protection from Saudi Arabia, maybe they think that, you know, equal treatment means you give special privileges to Israel. And then they go away and see, we're equal. We treat people equally around the world. But I think we should treat people equally by offering friendship, by treating and by concentrating on protecting the liberties of American citizens, and stay out of the business of all this mischief.
No, and of course, you've always quoted Washington about we want trade with everyone. We want friendship with everyone. We don't want to be entangled with anybody else. We just want to mind our own business.
That would be great someday, maybe.
Well, Ron Paul, thanks for all you do in that cause and have done for so long and continue to lead the fight. And thanks so much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Lou.
Bye-bye. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.